why we said that was the purpose of the building, the thing we do know and all things of that endeavor, because we will still be coming back with those details during our strategic presentation. Starting the question from Honorable Government, the target of 140,000 jobs, how has it arrived at? This was the work of the multi-stakeholder forum through the new tech process. As I indicated, we have a job creation has been there. So there was a process that we engaged in that involved civil consultation with affected mining companies where they would give input in terms of numbers that we were comfortable could be achieved. Of course, as that was being done, it was with the understanding that there are these dependencies in terms of the constraints that are in place. So therefore, parallel to the process of ensuring that those jobs are created, we needed to be working on issues around some of the constraints that are there. And that's why this process is just going in parallel. As we have said, so far we are confident that we are on track in terms of the question on the binding constraints, I think on one of the slides,
can we know this aspect of job creation? I think the question should be also posed, is 140,000 not a too low a figure for the mining industry as a whole, particularly when you take into account the prospects of the beneficiation strategies in the country? Has that not been pushed too low?
Thank you, sir. These figures do not take into account the issue of beneficiation strategy, the implementation of the but at the time setting the target, we were still busy finalizing the detailed work and strategy itself. So once we have started with the implementation, we can then come back and advise the committee. Now that we have done enough work on the communication implementation plan, we believe that these are the numbers that are here. So this has not increased.
Thank you all to the members. Just to have here and assure the members that they ask the question how they are wearing. And then the question by the speaker, by the chairperson, that are these questions. In fact, when we said together with the MUTEC partner, Chamber of Mines, as well as members, as well as the other, they said we could even overachieve 140,000. Jobs to be tested. If those that the military issues are affected now. And to assure you, because I had a sense that you worried about the people, as of last year, 2011, from the first month of 2011 up to September, we treated 16,000 jobs. And those jobs were treated primarily in two areas, in the PGM area, platinum group of metal, and then as well as iron ore. And then in gold we are not doing that well. But that has given us confidence that we are very much within the target of 140,000 jobs. In other words, a year we are going to create about 14,000 jobs in a company in the mining sector. That's the key missing negotiation and point. So yes, we do take note some of this concept, but I can assure you that we are doing quite well when you look at this figure, despite also of the zero debt crisis, which also impacts on our, you know, our minerals and as well by moving out outside of the country. So I just wanted to add to what my important just the question. Thank you.
Yes.
asking this question precisely because we see very good performance when it comes to commodity prices. Even if you look at the gold, gold price has now surpassed platinum as we speak today. And when you look at the annual reports of the mining companies, you will see a number of companies have performed very well in terms of their profit margins. Now the worry therefore is this not an occasion of profit maximization at the expense of plowing back into the industry through job creation? Or are we faced with a situation where there's over-automation in the mining industry and therefore creating a problem in terms of reasonable numbers of jobs that could be created? I'm trying to interrogate this. We will also engage mining companies when we meet them on the 14th of March on the mining charter report. We will indeed, you know, ask them, because during the mining charter presentations, they gave us their estimate of jobs that they could create, specifically for Masindi, but also the round figure comes not too far from the other important target. So I'm just asking this question so that we are able to then understand what is it that we are faced with here. Are these efforts not thwarted as a result of profit maximization in your view?
Thanks, Chair. I think you are raising quite sentiment issues that we will take back to our job creation task for further deliberation and really so that we can unpack and come back as we, when we come back to the committee, we'll be able to provide more details in terms of what the findings are in terms of farming.
Bushmit, you want to maybe follow up here?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. This is the third question which needs to be answered. I'm not saying what you're saying, the other question is wrong. What I'm saying is the third aspect. That is, if you look at infrastructure, that's what the mining sector is saying. And because there is no enough infrastructure to export the coal produced wherever, you can't have higher production because you can't export this, or you can't, there's no offset market for it. So if they're going to come back, please consider that as a third possibility. Because infrastructure, water, is very important for mining. So is railway line. So is electricity. You cannot have another mine being set up if there's no electricity. Where's going to get electricity from? So these are issues which need to be considered in a combined fashion. Not one or the other. There might be more important factors than the other. There's also pertinent factors which need to be considered. Thank you.
I think we note the input. As I indicated in my response to the question of the 130,000, we did indicate that as we were setting the target, that we were understanding that there are those constraints around infrastructure and so like that. So we will, with your permission, Chair, come back to the more comprehensive response around this particular issue. The other question around beneficiation on the details around the approved value chain. Cabinet approved the iron ore and steel value chain as well as the energy value chain. Basically, the implementation plan focuses more on high level initiatives that have to be undertaken by various partners in order to unlock the potential that we have around beneficiation. Just to give an example, if we identify that there is a fuel shortage, we would identify a high level initiative that needs to be performed, identify the key departments that have to be part of that process, because understood that this particular strategy cannot be implemented, you know, through the efforts of only one person alone, but a number of issues are qualified for that. So in the implementation plan, we go into the detail, saying what needs to be done by which department and when we start to do that. And in terms of the recommendations to the cabinet, this work will be monitored through the cluster system that we have in the cabinet, where different departments sit in specific clusters, like the economic development cluster, as well as the infrastructure. So there we will come together and monitor whether we are actually making progress in terms of things that we have to do. And on the question of red team of officials, we do have an internal rating unit within the DMR, and in terms of the question on whether we had any rejection so far, while we know that the process is still in progress, we haven't finalized the entire process, but we haven't had any rejection at this stage. Questions from Honorable Lucas? On the question of the budget, whether we are comfortable that our budget would cover some of the projects that we have spoken here about. As we usually do annually, we go through the process of aligning the available resources through the allocation letters that we get from National Treasury and make sure that what is put in the annual plan talks to the available resources for that financial. So we will not go and plan for things that we don't have funding for. We'd rather prepare those and do them. So when we come back to the strategy, then those that are going to be in the agency are going to be aligned to the available funding. The other questions on benefits, and I think that's covered those as part of the earlier response. And we agree, Honorable, that the granting should be dealt with and it should not be tolerated. And we are perhaps just to indicate here that as from December, all government departments have now implemented the triple B scorecard around procurement. And there is less emphasis put on the element of ownership because it now looks at the entire thing. So basically, when we do our procurement now, we rely heavily on the certifications that we get from the verification agency to say this company is a level 4321 contribution, and all that is on that basis we then allocate the cost. So it's something that from the procurement point of view, with a triple B, the role of line departments like ourselves is somewhat limited in terms of verifying because the information, unlike in the past when we used to have suppliers provide details about ownership and so forth, we are required to give them points on the basis of the level of contribution. On the role of, I think I'm moving on now to the question from Honorable Smith. In terms of the role of the mining company in beneficiation, yes, as the minister indicated, mining companies are not required to do beneficiation. What we are saying in the implementation plan, or even in the strategy supported by the implementation centers here. Our role as DMR is to create an environment where beneficiation can take place. And in order for that to happen, obviously the mineral resources have to be made available. So it's a combination of an enabling environment in terms of the infrastructure, but also ensuring that the supply side of things is actually coming to the pipe, because there is no point setting up a plant which is not going to be getting enough supply. So part kind of our proposal is for us to first have indicated in the MPRC minimum requirements in terms of commodities or resources that have to be made available on the other side for the communication local. So that is the role that we need to see in companies play the constraints I think I've covered earlier on. The issue of IDZ and how it affects the negotiation strategy. As I indicated, for now we have the strategy in place. We work on the implementation at the high level that identify critical constraints at the high level and what we need to do that. So we do recognize that there might be other issues that are at an implementation level and we pick those up as we work into a better details of the implementation. The question from Honorable Sikani. I think the issue of mitigation is an issue that we have responded to previous number of occasions in terms of saying that we are now, I think, on the 10th year anniversary of the MPRC, where we understood that when we implement a method of mitigation, there is obviously going to be quite a number of issues that, you know, could be open to different interpretations. And in terms of the way in which we apply the law as the department, it is only through some of those legal challenges that we face that we then get to a common understanding of what the Act requires of us to do. But obviously, it is something that we would have taken and in terms of this is what the Act requires as passed by Parliament, and we implement it as we find it. And if there are some parties who feel that the manner in which we implement the Act is not, you know, either constitutional or whatever the case might be, then that issue gets to be left to the court to decide whether their interpretation or ours is correct. So we feel comfortable to actually defend the position around, you know, how we interpret, how we implement the law as defined, and ensuring that we don't have a situation where, you know, there is too many open interpretations around what we can be able to do on the entire process. And as far as the amendments are concerned,
I think the whole is I'm sure the question with an advice that we need to call you back here at some stage to appraise us on all the mitigations that either in pipeline or your cabinet that dispensed with them, because some of the judgments that arise out of such mitigation are worrisome. For instance, if you look at this Agri-SA, the judgment on Agri-SA versus yourselves is in a way saying that MPRDA, in the manner in which it stands, is bordering on being unconstitutional, in that it represents a situation where there has been expropriation of mineral rights from individual hands to the state without compensation. And if that judgment stands, it basically says the sum totality of the NPRPA is unconstitutional. And in political terms, it sets back whatever transformation processes that we have done in the mining industry since the promulgation of the NPRPA in 2006. And that's quite dangerous. In anybody's case, quite dangerous to say that the majority of the people of the country are staying excluded from benefiting from the mineral wealth of this country. And it will drive the country into a situation which is undesirable. As we're going to discuss, the same support at some stage, we'll delve deeper into this matter, because these are not just matters of a difference between two individuals. These are issues that have got a direct impact politically in the country, particularly when we look at the history of World Cup. But if there are indications that the NPRPA is structured in such a manner that there are certain loopholes, I think the your process of reviewing the NPRPA and the amendments that you bring to us will deal with that aspect. But you won't be able to deal with a broader political challenge that is imposed upon the NPRPA. I'm sure that question is based on that. So which means we're not going to enter into dialogue. I think these are follow-up questions on questions that you have asked. And I'm not going to allow that every time I make an injunction you then raise your hand, and that must be the order of the day. It won't be allowed in that question.
But as you raise it, it's something I'd like to raise, because it's been raised and you might have that question.
This is what I'm trying to present. I have not asked questions, precisely because I've allowed all members to delve into this matter. But you see, as they are responding, I'm picking on issues that are on my list as well, that I wanted to raise. But I don't want a situation where in the middle of them responding, every time we come in and we take them back. But I'll give you another chance if you can note your question down to respond to ask it once more, once the second round will come into play. Continue.
I think my colleague will deal with some of the questions from Honorable. The question from Honorable I think it was mainly on beneficiation. I have covered it behind in terms of what we are doing and where we are with the beneficiation strategy. And then I think sort of covered the questions which we are like to spend. So we're not yet at that stage where we are able to say question from
the one in my new
only question from Honorable Sanjo. My colleague, Mr. Medin, is bringing the aspect on employment equity internally within the department. And the question around timelines and targets, I think in my opening, cover that to some extent. And whether the issue of issuing mining rights to complying applications results in jobs and how we link the two. I think what we are trying to communicate here is that we will only issue rights to applicants who are compliant. And obviously then, if those rights are issued and the client aspect to the more the issue of rights to the compliance. And then lastly from my side is the question around the last question talks to health.
In terms of how skills are given the information for the relationship, we are, as the department represented, at the MPA, in terms of the board and the employees as well. We are also working with our indicate that we have together agreed that the strategic plan of the NQA in the next 5 years should focus on the government imperative. New growth path, what we call the NSDS 3, which is the National Development Strategy 3, that has been introduced by the government training, the mining charter, the skills accord, we clearly indicate what are the needs of the of the country in terms of actually we are participating in that. The beneficiation process as well is covered in terms of our services. And last issue that happens is our salary. And I think our strategic plan is here in terms of the target in the time of the we are active in training, we have committed register of 2,000 units every year. And there has been indication that about 15,000 are examples of that we need for them to progress to be qualified as so we want to support. We have problems. Lastly, we have agreed that we are going to issue a location of the like we are looking at the guided by the mining charter. The mining charter is an indication that we should be 10% in the government. So all the programs that are in the government, and so forth, will be a chance of getting the government that has more cost. And I think we will constantly, you know, do the program that is there was also a question that was asked in terms of the coaching. I think we have agreed internally with the department and also through the NQA that there should be short-term, medium, and long-term measures that we should be able to do. We have knowledge that we can't compete. In fact, the industry itself can't compete. So short-term, my colleagues can also talk on that. We have our reduction and retention strategy that we have internally created. We have an HRP program that is also looking to support the inflow and probably attraction of people between the departments. But long-term is to ensure that there is enough food pool within the industry. And I was talking about the balance as well. Because the industry, well, they are struggling with engineers themselves, so that's why they come to us to deal with that. And my colleague has spoken about the issue of skills
we have seen it as a, as also an issue that we have to look at elsewhere. Because without the case, you won't be appointed in the same time. You may have to respect as well. The time is going to be respected as one day. I think long term, with all the stakeholders, they need to be researching. In terms of health, we, and I acknowledge the issue among your colleagues in terms of, you know, the talking of health, we have acknowledged that we are really concerned with the importance of European health. But I think the challenge with health is it's latent in our period. What I'll say about it. Health is not the same as the two sectors. Essentially, there's a first round now and the future. The health takes you between 10 to 15 years to acquire comfort. So what we are seeing, the diseases that we are seeing now, are as a result of the legacy issue. In other words, people have been exposed to that area. But we have agreed as well through that summit that we have in November last year. We have to put more effort at all stages to prevent exposure to gas or to non-touching. So ensure that we have a long impact on their health process. In fact, that that summit was also addressed by the Minister of Health, Minister and obviously giving us an indication of that expectation to how we deal with their health. So yes, it was one of the issues that we have committed ourselves to.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. In terms of employment equity in Canada within the department, especially with regards to women, I must say that we have exceeded our targets there, albeit at a lower level. But there is intervention to train women at women management skills to rise up to management levels as well. We have an identified women program through our HRD company within the department to address that problem. So, yes, generally, yes, we have exceeded our targets, but then we have to move then women up to managerial levels in cognizant of that and then intervention that we put in place. In terms of other issues, which are not part of this, but I must mention, there is also an intervention that we put in place in terms of attracting other race groups, in particular colored and Indians, and the way we're going to do that would be to literally headhunt, because go to the general media, we have not had any success in that, and we have felt that I think for us to be able to address that, we have to direct the headhunt. And that also goes particularly for disabled people, because again, we have not had responses from them in terms of the applications that have been put out there. What we're going to do and a concerted effort will be put to actually enhance them, give an agency a brief to say all the CVs that we will be getting should be from disabled people. So that our interventions, as I said earlier, we will be sitting at 0.6%, which is a total of about 60 disabled people with various disabilities within the department, but we're hoping to up that at least to achieve the national target of 2% that are public sector. So I think that is interesting.
I think there are two interpretations to that.
people who are saying they will apply one can be part of it.
They will no longer be productive in business terms. Yeah. But remember, are there any other questions, follow-ups or new questions that you want to raise? Honorable Schmidt, followed by Honorable Lucas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The issue concerning the litigation that we wanted to make a comment on the question was there are a number of issues currently. The Kumba ICT matter, I mean, there we have the previous Director General having made affidavit and the department's role in that whole saga. Now, someone needs to come and explain what happened in that matter. I mean, you can't have a court case being found against a party with it. Department's decision to allocate a mineral right is set aside by a court and you go on as a business as usual, because that is the current state of affairs. One needs to establish whether that particular judgment has an impact on the FPRDA, and it does, because it basically says you can't give two mining rights or rights or prospecting rights in terms of an indivisible right. In other words, you can't split that right with it. 78.21.4%. And it has a serious impact on the FPRDA. So we need some form of a report back saying this is what the court case is, we are appealing, we're not appealing, and this is what impact it has, and when can we expect, you see that comes back to the regulatory environment, when can we expect the amendments to the FPRDA to discuss this issue, or has your interpretation of the FPRDA, despite there not being an amendment necessary, forthcoming. In other words, some feedback as to what's constant. The same with the matter which the chairman wrote. The ugly essay had a phenomenal impact, in my view, on the MPRDA, because in an exception application, it said that basically it was not on the point, so it's not the, what they call, the crux of the matter, it's not the right to the end, but it said it comes, the MPRDA basically comes down to expropriation. That's what it said. Now, it has an impact on the MPRDA, and we need to understand what impact it has, what the department's point of view is it appealing that matter, and do we, if it is appealing, what amendments are we to proceed? And so we can go on. The mine health issue concerning that individual has gentleman passed away a day before the Constitutional Court gave his judgment on the filtration matter. All these issues have an impact on what the Department of Human Resources do. We read about them in the newspapers. I get the court case, I read the court case, but as the DMR just said, well, it didn't happen. That's my point of view. What is the DMR saying about this issue? And so we can go on. There's a Northern Cape judgment in 2008-2007 saying that my slag is basically the ownership of the mining company on the central. We don't have business as usual. I think what the Amendment Act passed subsequent was passed in Parliament, as far as I understand, was never signed by the President. What's happening to that? So all these issues, legal issues and court cases, against and for and with the partners of law, all needs to be aired somehow. I'm not seeing the consequences of this court judgment coming through. That's basically my point.
Thank you very much,
Honourable
Lynn.
The implementation plan that's been approved by the cabinet, I'd be very interested to have a look at that.
And then I shall have a
just two issues first I'd like to raise. One is the cost of utility, and the other is the cost of payment. And although that's the margin of the type of gold we must pay tax for, because I think mining houses will not survive. It's a type lower. So what can we do about this thing? How can we affect the cost of the high cost of the system and the high cost of the system?
All right. Those being the follow-up questions. I think just a few issues. On page 4 of the slide, on the documentation, You're talking of issuing of frustrating rights, mining rights, mining permits to comply with the permits. Now, one member raised the matter of the government about mineral rights that have not been executed by those who hold those rights. Now, what does that have to say? But also linking this matter to the outcome of the moratorium that was imposed on the issue of permits for 6 months, and the whole idea when the minister has made some pronouncements in a number of platforms. The whole idea of the possibility of auctioning those rights. Now, I want to link this to the infrastructure for mining. Very good, the president has made the pronouncement that there will be good projects. But what role, because what you must also link this to the question relating to funding of this the budget constraints that some of you look at for the first. What role is played by the private sector to invest in the infrastructure development, especially the infrastructure insofar as their operation costs? I know that if you go to another case, you will find Cuba, for example, that got a rail line from the mine straight to the port of either Saldana, and there were discussions about redirecting that to the Eastern Cape. Now, is this entirely the responsibility of government? I'm raising this because when you discuss the notion and the idea of auctioning of these mineral rights, you link the awarding of the mineral rights to the infrastructure development. That even goes beyond the business of mining. Goes to an extent of ensuring that there are social infrastructure developments that take place. For an example, you get this mining right, you are going to build a rail line, but in between the rail line and your operations and the port, you will build a school, you will build a team, something of a future, which now in your terms is social and development. Now, we need to take all of this into account, because once we are not sure where the budget is going to come from, but at the same time, these are mineral rights, this is mineral wealth of the country that must be enabled to come back. So that's why in the idea of auctioning of mineral rights, you talk about what is it that the owner of this right is going to do in the process of exploiting this mineral. So I want you to also respond to that, but it's important to what has this happened, so that we can then gain more scope. Now, I agree with the Honourable Norma that we need the presentation at some stage one in all your implementation plan in terms of negotiation has been dealt with the approved government, so that we can come and appraise us for all of that. Now, you know, issues pertaining to scarcity of water, scarcity and cost thereof of the energy is what the president has referred to. But what worries me is that the president today says government is engaging ESCOM to find a pricing path that will enable one ESCOM to survive as an entity, but on the other hand, that will make the cost of doing business much more easier than it is now. I think Honorable Lucas has amplified this point very well. But a day after that, or 2 days after that, you find the NERSA representative, I just forget the name of the person, who says, unless and until ESCOM is given money, you won't see the easing of that. It reminds me of a situation where the entire country was complaining about the increase of tariffs on electricity, and NERSA simply went ahead, irrespective of who says why. I don't know, this is not your field, you're not in any respect, but I'm just raising this matter because, but later it was corrected, when the Minister of Public Enterprises re-emphasized yesterday in Parliament that indeed ESCOM and government are working on a pricing arrangement that will impact positively on the growth path and the growth trajectory that the country is in. So it's just to say that sometimes we talk past each other. On one hand, there are very good plans which will enable the country to grow. On the other hand, there seems to be frustration in terms of this is the principle, this is the policy, and therefore there's no shift that we realize. But we are also getting at this on the issue of procurement and employment equity. Your take of the president's address seems to be more inward looking. You are looking at a department. You are not saying to us, what role are you going to play out there in ensuring that procurement arrangements are taking shape in the industry. Equity employment arrangements are taking shape in the industry, not only departments. It's very good to say in-house this is what you're doing, in-house these are the plans, but what kind of impact will your work have in the industry wide? Because here you are regulators of the mining industry, and as a result, you would expect that whatever marching orders from the State of the Nation address by the FEMA, you would also apply that to those that you are overseeing. Because when we go out there on oversight, we would want to see really some movement towards the direction that it's been given. Those are just a few areas. If you could please get to respond.
Again for
kind of the process, how we're going to be following that practice. But however, it's safe to say that whatever process we come up with, it will have to be in line with the MPI with the current. So we cannot go and come up with a process that is not currently catered for in the law. The issue of the role of private sector in infrastructure, my colleague from our regional office in Cape Town will deal with that. And we agree with you, Chairman, in terms of our focus on procurement and implementation, that we didn't cover much on the aspect of our regulatory role. Honorable members are aware that these two aspects are actually covered in the mining charter. We have a responsibility to ensure that there is compliance to the charges that are set in the mining charter around this area. So we will be continuing to monitor the company in terms of their compliance level as set in the current mining charter. And where there are areas of non-compliance, we take the necessary corrective measures that transform the
okay, thank you, the issue of infrastructure versus the issue of licenses. One is to note that when you approve the social labor plan, that has different legs in it. You've got the SMME development, you've got the HRD, you've got the infrastructure, you've got your creation as well. So through that license, you would process, you would check if it is possible to get the companies to contribute on infrastructure. Obviously, that document becomes a binding agreement between the companies and the state. So yes, as per the need on each and every license that is processed, one would consider the issues of infrastructure.
Okay.
Okay.
Anything else that arises out of the responses that are given. Right. Thank you very much. Let's thank the department for within this very short space of time putting together the implementation that you did. And indeed you assisted us also that going forward when we further unpack the state of the nation address, because this is a living thing. When we further unpack it, therefore we will also be assisted in terms of what we have put forward. Indeed, also some of the issues we will take into account when we deal with the budget, the vote of the legislators. So thank you very much. And we understand the dilemma that the DG finds itself in. Honorable members, the DG has been excused through my commission, because he's dealing with a peculiar matter that you raised with me. So it's not out of respect that he left the meeting we could finish. He was hoping to be back before we're done, but unfortunately I'm sure he's still here. Now, thank you very much for your attendance and for your participation. Now, honorable members, the next week, the date, in terms of the program that you adopted, we would be receiving a briefing from MINTEC and Council for Geoscience. But we also want to, on the same date of the 22nd of February, to deal with the report on the public hearing pertaining to the mining charter. I know that because Parliament is in session, we will not get permission to sit for the whole day. I'm going to test you. We'll try to change the meetings and pressures. Prove it to be impossible. One of the members agreed that they are coming. The next thing you get is the number of apologies. You end up having very few. I don't know until what time we have a house on the 22nd. And I want to test if you are ready to sitting after the house. We deal with the first part of our meeting on the 22nd. We then again go to the house, go to lunch, go to the house, and we come back. Or we can back on you starting here. Or we go back to a Friday. Because the that report on public hearing is very important. It requires you to pay particular attention and emerge with recommendations. So what I'm putting before you is either we soldier on the 22nd after sitting of the house, and or we go back to a Friday. If we're talking Friday, we're talking the 24th, in within that week, right? 24th, that's next week. So, Wednesday we handle the intake and GSI, counter for GSI, and then Friday we handle that report. How's your feeling? Do you, what is it that you want?
I have to make an apology. I cannot be there. When you say the full pride, I'm sorry, but if you make a sit down for a decent month ago, there's one thing I can't do. So, unfortunately, I can meet with you after the meeting or whatever. I've given my inputs, but I can't do that. So, my apology.
Well, it was a Friday. We will have only one item that is on the agenda, the public hearing for. Are you available? One of you guys? That's all. So this is one of the things we and we don't know about those that are. If all of us are here, those who said they will be here, we will be making contact so we can do the And then let me also say that on the 7th of March, we're looking at a joint meeting with public enterprise on that matter of Alex Coach Development Foundation. I know that we've got two other items on there, but we can handle them easily with the help of the department. For instance, briefing by the petroleum agency shouldn't take us more than an hour. Briefing by miners or safety inspectorate, that's the same, shouldn't take us more than an hour. And then we move on to the joint meeting with the public enterprise. But it's not in any event that doesn't change the initial So on that day, we want to emerge with the right letters to public enterprise to the photo committee and the department so that we can have this matter. The intention is to deal and take decisive decisions on the matter pertaining to this trust. I would be happy if you would apply your mind so that when we meet on the server, we take very clear decisions on what to do with all three of these trust funds in the Northern Cape, the RSCO Development Foundation, NAMDA, as well as NDFG, so that we are in a position to dispense with that work out of our general system. Honorable members, let me thank you very much for attending and the meeting.
Thank you, Robert.